Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer.
Hi, I'm Bernadette from the research and care charity Breast Cancer Now. On today's podcast, I'm speaking with Lauren from Brighton. In 2018, Lauren was the face of our Care After Breast Cancer campaign, and she took part in our annual London fashion show. She also runs her own blog called Cancer Chat. Today, we'll be chatting about her personal experience of breast cancer and some tips for managing the festive season after diagnosis. Lauren, thank you for joining us today. I wonder if you could start off by telling us a bit about your breast cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, so I was moisturising in August 2017, and I just felt a small, hard lump. I always describe it as, you know, the sweet Skittles. That's how I describe it. It was very pronounced. And I happened to have a GP appointment the next day through something unrelated and told her about the lump. The GP felt it and said that due to my age, she didn't think there was anything to be concerned about, but wanted to refer me to the hospital just to be on the safe side. I went on a holiday to Sri Lanka, had an amazing time, got back, went to the hospital. A consultant felt the breast and again said that due to my age, he didn't think there was an issue. I was 31 at the time. And fast forward a few weeks, I had an ultrasound, mammogram and a biopsy. And it's really strange, actually, because now I look back on it and there were warning signs in terms of the fact that I was having further tests on the same day and the fact that I had a biopsy. But I just kept telling myself that it would be fine. They were just doing it for precaution, so that makes sense. And then I had all of those tests. I went away. I ran my first ever half marathon. And then 2 days later, I walked into this room with my husband and was told that I had breast cancer.
And can you describe how that felt when you heard those words, you have breast cancer?
The only way I know how to describe it, if I think back, I felt the floor fall beneath me. I can't, it's a feat, there's nothing like it. It's really hard to describe. But I think until you know someone who's had cancer or until you've had cancer yourself, I associated it with death. I hadn't had any cancer in my family. I didn't know anyone with cancer. So I just kind of presumed that it was the end of the world. And I remember crying a lot. And I remember just thinking that the world was ending. And then the staff were amazing. And the Macmillan nurse kind of took me and my husband, Nick, to a room next to the one we'd just been in and talked me through what was going to happen. And then I just felt a bit like a zombie, actually, when we were walking home. It just felt like it wasn't happening to me.
And so your husband was with you when you found the news out, but how did you go about telling other loved ones and, you know, friends and family about what you just heard?
Yeah, so I'm so glad he was with me. I can't imagine being told that news by yourself. I was a total cop-out and I didn't tell my mum myself. I got Nick to do it. There were only a few people who actually knew that I'd found a lump in the first place because I just didn't want to worry anyone. So Nick called and told my mum. He also told my best friend. And then I told the odd person, but I wanted to wait until I had a fully fledged plan so that I wouldn't be scaring everyone else like I was scared. So I kind of waited about a week and then I started to tell people. But I do feel a little bit like a coward. I just told people over message. I found it really difficult to, it almost felt like a full-time job telling people and then managing their reactions to me telling them this news. So it was just, there's the inevitable. If you ever tell someone face-to-face, you get a head tilt, like a sympathetic head tilt. And I almost felt over message like I was getting this head tilt. And you then kind of have to say, no, it's okay. I don't think I'm going to die. There's a plan, but yes, I've got this, and this is what's probably going to happen over the next few months or so.
So were the reactions that you were receiving after giving out this news, was it what you expected?
Yes, in the main, because I've just got such incredible family and friends around me. I'm so lucky. I wouldn't have got through the past few years without them. So I think pretty much everyone did react how I was expecting them to. The thing that was really nice, actually, that came out of this is some of my relationships with people were strengthened. I've been kind of in the same group of friends since I was 11, so they remained throughout. But there were people who were perhaps friends who I hadn't been friends with that long. So a few work people who I got on really well with, but then I got this diagnosis and they just properly stepped up. Like, they were amazing. And not just at work, like outside of it. They were the kind of people that would message me, and rather than ask me what I needed, they would just say, when are you free? I'm coming round. I'm bringing dinner. And I think that's the kind of thing you need. You're not in the right frame of mind to think about what you need, especially when you've just gone through however many rounds of chemo. You need people just to be proactive. And that's what some people did, which really helped.
Sounds like you had incredible support during that
treatment
process.
Yeah, I'm so lucky. I think it's one of those things where you just need, although you're going through the experience individually, no one else other than people who've gone through cancer know how you're feeling, but you need that support network around you, and you need people there almost to retain a sense of normality. I know that just because I had cancer and that was taking up quite a large proportion of my life at that time, that I didn't want to become cancer. And just because that was happening to me, it doesn't mean that anything that was happening to my friends was any less important. And it kind of kept my sense of, almost just kept me in the real world. I think cancer can turn you into quite a selfish person, and not in a horrible way, but just in the sense that everything revolves around you. So I've spoken to Nick about this since, actually, and he kind of said that when people would come around, they would ask me how I was. No one would ask him how he was, and he was the one that was looking after me the majority of the time. And you kind of lose that sense because you're so engrossed in what's happening. So I think having that support kind of keeps you grounded. I think it's really important. Yeah.
And once treatment stopped, how did that feel for you? Did you still feel as supported, or did it feel different?
Definitely felt different. It felt like the morning after the night before. So it felt like how long would it have been? So I was diagnosed in October and my final treatment was on the 1st of August. So almost a year. And I was basically the centre of attention for a year. Like, everyone would message me all the time. People would want to see me. If anyone came to visit, they would want to talk to me. Everything would be about me. And then all of a sudden, through no one's fault, I think this is just probably what happens, but I had my last radiotherapy and the appointment stopped. So I'd lost that sense of any sort of routine. I'd lost any kind of immediate medical support. So I still have the breast care nurses and they're still there even now if I want to speak to someone. But I didn't have an oncologist to see anymore. And all of that kind of fell. And the messages would be less frequent from people. And it was almost like the thing I think I found most difficult was I felt like it wasn't a topic of conversation anymore. So I was still suffering, but I didn't feel like I could talk about it because I didn't want to go on and on about it. But the thing is with cancer treatment is I felt like I needed the most support once it was over, because you know, I still had no hair and my face was still massively bloated from steroids, and I still had reconstructed breasts. Like, I still had all of these things, but there was just no one there for support. And I think, I mean, I've been to see a counsellor since, and that was actually when the counselling started afterwards. And we've had conversations between us where we've kind of said that we both think that that should be introduced towards the start of treatment. Because you're going through all these emotions and you're so focused on the physical bits and trying to get through treatment that the mental health aspect of it gets pushed to one side. And it's only when, in my case, all of the physical parts, if you see what I mean, once all of that part stopped, it was then I kind of realised what had happened to me, and actually that my mental health probably wasn't in as good a place as I was telling everyone else it was.
And how helpful has that counselling been for you?
It's been helpful. I think I would have found it more helpful as I was going through treatment. I think it's really difficult to strike the balance between needing help and addressing and dealing with what's happened with clinging on to it. So I kind of wanted to almost address it, put it into somewhere in my head, and then think, okay, I don't actually have cancer anymore, and this would be really depressing if I just think about it all the time. So I think it's striking the balance between that and then being able to move forward. And for me, what this has shown is that I need to be able to talk to people around me. So not necessarily just a counsellor, but feeling able, more willing to talk to people around me and not feel like a burden just because my treatment has effectively ended.
You were diagnosed with breast cancer in October and your treatment happened over Christmas and also into the new year. How was spending your first Christmas? What was that like for you?
It was difficult, in a word. My birthday's on the 21st of December, so I had that to deal with as well, and that was quite strange. So I was turning 32 and I still had in my head all of these things that I hadn't done, and I felt like cancer was pushing me back. I remember Nick organised a surprise birthday for me, which was lovely, but there were a lot of people there and I remember feeling how intense it was. It's really strange. I continued to work throughout my cancer treatment because I was lucky enough to be able to do so. However, I worked from home, so it was quite solitary. And you do realise over time that a lot of it does become very personal and quite lonely. And this birthday party, there were so many people there and it felt really overwhelming. And actually, the whole of Christmas for me felt really overwhelming. I've got a big family who I love, and I love spending time with them. There's no one else I'd rather. However, it was so loud and it was just, I just felt like I had to put on a front because I didn't want to ruin everyone's Christmas. And also because, as I kind of alluded to earlier, everything was about me. It was all about, when is Lauren's next chemo? Who's going with her to that appointment? Is she okay? How much hair does she have left at this current point? And actually, Christmas, I didn't want it to be about that. And this is my own paranoia, but I felt like people were looking at me, and it was all of my kind of insecurities felt like they came to the forefront. And even just trying to please everyone, to make sure we'd seen everyone and that I didn't look sick, all of these things came into play. And I think what's really difficult about Christmas is, compared to another time of year, is everyone's happy. But when you're going through treatment and you just feel so awful, it's quite difficult to deal with.
You've just captured really well that, you know, Christmas can be an overwhelming time at the best of times, let alone just after you've had a diagnosis. So if you could give some advice to someone else who's just received a diagnosis, could you share some tips that you, or some hints for making that day just that little bit less overwhelming?
Yeah, so I think I've spoken about this before, but don't fall foul of FOMO. So I get such bad FOMO, like cancer or no cancer. And I think what you have to do is be kind to yourself. So there's always plans over Christmas, but put your care first. So if you don't think you're up to spending time with all of these groups of people, then just say that. Or don't feel guilty for letting people down. Not that you are letting people down, but don't feel guilty for breaking plans. I know when I was first diagnosed, that was one of the first things I said to people, that over the next year, things could change. I might not be able to do as much. And I think Christmas is exactly the same. If you halfway through feel like you need to go and have a nap, then just do it, because it's important to take care of yourself. I would say Christmas actually, for me, was quite a nice time, because it would be things like you can get snuggled up, go for wintry walks, watch a good Christmas film. I found actually when it got to later on in my treatment, when the weather was nice, that was when I found it really hard, because my hair hadn't grown back and I was having to go outside when it was kind of, it would look a bit strange if I had a beanie hat on. And I think ultimately it's about not putting pressure on yourself. So yes, it's a lovely time of year, but Christmas happens every year. There's lots of other times when you can be around family and friends, and I think that's probably the key.
Yeah. You've mentioned a couple of self-care tips, like, you know, snuggling up or going for a walk, not falling foul of FOMO.
Yeah.
What's your favourite self-care tip?
I think, as I've just alluded to, about not pressurising yourself. So whether you're going through treatment or whether treatment's finished, you're unlikely just to rebound back to your pre-cancer self, as I'd say. I think I've changed forever now, but not necessarily in a bad way. I think actually in a good way. I think it's about managing expectations, so not feeling disappointed if you can't do what you were doing last year, because it's not about that. It's not about comparing yourself to your previous self or comparing yourself to others. It's about doing what's right for you at that time and feeling able to tell everyone around you if you're not okay. And getting extra good Christmas presents, that's what I would say.
Of course.
Totally play the cancer card there.
And Christmas and the New Year can also be a time for reflection for many people. So is there something that you'll be reflecting on as 2019 draws to a close?
I've been very lucky this year because Nick and I went travelling. So I took a 6-month sabbatical and we left in March, and I will not bore you with the details, but the short version is that we went travelling from South America through Central America, North America and Canada, and got back in July, the end of July. I also managed to fit in a week's holiday with my best friend Laws in Malaga at the end of it, so I thought I'd really make the most of it. So I will be reflecting on how lucky we were to be able to do that, and also that a few years ago I would never have thought that I would have been able to do that at all. It was the last thing. So I think always try and think about what could happen. The moment you're in doesn't have to be what lasts forever. I will be reflecting on the fact that my hair's grown, because that's very exciting, and the fact that I can now pin it back when I go for a run. I've entered a half marathon next year, which will be amazing, because I've only done one before, so this will be my second one. So I'll be reflecting on the fact that my fitness has started to get back to what it was. And I think just I've come to realise this year that cancer doesn't have to define me. So this has been my first year where I haven't had to have any treatment, and I will take it that this will hopefully be the way that I get to live moving forward.
You're now just reached your 2-year cancerversary, is that correct?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
If you could give your former self some advice, what would that be?
Oh, I would say be kind to yourself And I know that lots of people are saying that at the moment. It's kind of become a buzz phrase, but I think it's so true. Just if you want to, it's just little things. If you want to have a lion, have a lion. The world isn't going to fall apart because you haven't done everything that's on your to-do list. I used to live by to-do lists, and now I just think, just live in the moment. I would say don't compare yourself to others. I think that's, particularly in the cancer world, I think that's actually really difficult. And social media, for me, has been amazing. It's introduced me to a lot of incredible people. But I also think that it does lend itself to people comparing themselves. And I think everyone's cancer experience is different and everyone's treatment is different. And I think sometimes it can be dangerous looking at what other people are doing. You need to live for yourself and do what's right for you. And I think one thing that I would say that I definitely didn't do is tell people if you're struggling. I didn't do that enough, and I never wanted to be a burden. And now I realise that that was ridiculous. But I think it's so important to tell people, even if you don't know why you're upset. I just have some days where I'd have a complete meltdown. But if you tell someone, even just a hug, I think, would make you feel so much better.
And if you could recommend a self-care stocking filler for someone, or if you'd like to give a hint to someone in your life, what would it be? What would it look like for you?
Oh, am I allowed to give more than one?
Of course.
Okay. I'm going to go down the cancer front with this because there's lots of things that I found helpful. A fan is now my most prized possession, and genuinely, if my house was on fire, I think that would be the one thing I would save.
Concertina fan or electric?
It's an electric fan, but it's incredible. Nick bought it for me. Best thing he's ever bought me, including my engagement ring. It is a fan. It folds up so it can go on your desk. It can go in your handbag. Travelling, it was incredible. And I'm in early menopause because of chemotherapy. And so hot flushes are my least favourite companion right now. So the fan comes out quite a lot. So I would definitely say a fan. Cozy socks. We're talking about wintry type vibes, especially when you're on that chemo chair. If you've got a cold cap on, nice cozy socks. Keep moisturised because your skin can be wrecked. And I've actually just bought a book, so I'm quite new into it, but so far it's working well. And I can't remember the author, but the book is called How to Manage Night Sweats and Hot Flushes. Not sure if it's a bestseller, but...
Sounds very practical.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the thing is, I think I've tried a few things in terms of hot flushes, and I started to realise that a lot of it might be psychological. So if I get anxious about something, I can feel a hot flush come on. So I'd heard that CBT was quite a good method to explore. So I would recommend that book, even though I'm only a tiny bit into it.
Great, thank you. And did you have any other thoughts or anything else you'd like to add?
Be wary of Dr. Google, I would say. I think it's quite dangerous. People can get into a dangerous headspace, I think. And if I looked at my rate of recurrence or my risk of death, for example, I would be petrified. So I actively chose not to do that, and I would suggest that anyone else also doesn't go down that route. And I think the key thing is to talk about the good bits of cancer, because there are, I promise there are. Talk about the rubbish stuff, tell people if you're having a bad day, just talk. That would be my main takeout, I think.
Lauren, thank you for talking with me today and for sharing your story with us.
Thanks, Bernadette.
Just to say that as it's the Christmas break next week, there won't be a podcast released as usual, so we'll see you again in the new year.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.